Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sarah Pascoe.
Hello, I'm Carriad Lloyd.
And we're weird about books.
We love to read.
We read too much.
We talk too much.
About the too much that we've read.
Which is why we've created
The Weirdos Book Club.
Join us.
A space for the lonely outsider to feel accepted and appreciated.
A place for the person who'd love to be in a real book club but doesn't like wine or nibbles.
Or being around other people.
Is that you? Join us.
Check out our Instagram at Sarah and Carriad's Weirdos Book Club for the upcoming books we're going to be discussing.
You can read along
and share your opinions.
Or just skulk around in your raincoat like the weirdo you are.
Thank you for reading with us. We like reading with you.
This week's book guest is Send Nudes by Saba Sams.
What's it about? It's a set of short stories, so it's about many different characters, a lot of whom are struggling with sex and relationships.
What qualifies it for the Weirdos Book Club? Well, it's a whole lot of outsiders, a lot of angst and pain, and there's a rabbit as well.
In this episode, we discuss
dads,
teenage girls,
snakebite,
hats,
the intranet,
and menstruation.
And joining us this week is Olga Koch. Olga is an award-winning stand-up who's currently on tour with her show, Prawn Cocktail, and she has a brilliant podcast called Family Jewels with Charlie Dinkin.
Welcome, Olga Koch.
Welcome, Olga Koch. This is a new thing we're trying.
Yes, singing is great, keep it.
So we are a little bit obsessed with you.
I'm obsessed with you. Yeah. I am, and I was saving it till we start recording because I'm embarrassed by it.
Why embarrassed?
Because I feel it's creepy.
Flattering.
I watch your stand-up on Instagram so much.
I love your stand-up for two reasons. One,
so
obviously,
good.
Hilarious.
So funny.
But also, I'm learning a lot about sex. And people, and I think
a young person. She's a young person.
What
teaching
I have is this. I really, you know, when you think, oh, the kids are going to be all
yes,
right,
yes, yes,
because the things you talk about and the audience are laughing about are so inclusive, and they're so sometimes, you know, sexual without being, oh, I'm saying a rude word. Everyone's just laughing at the language,
you know,
which is what it was when I started comedy.
People
would laugh because someone said dick.
Right. No.
Like in a really naughty schoolboy way.
No, it's very intelligent comedy.
Yes, yes.
But it's about smutty things, which I think
the psychology of sex.
You don't need to say anything. We're just going to talk about how
you're
good you
are. You're very kind. This is far
also,
too much.
I don't know if this is still available, but Olga once did one of the greatest radio shows I've ever heard. The Russian one.
Oh, it's called Fight. Yeah.
It was so good that I listen to radio comedy a lot, and often the thing with radio comedy is you can tune in and out, and I had to stop doing what I was doing. It was based on her Edinburgh show, and it was like a half-hour version of it,
wasn't it?
It was so good.
A very condensed.
If it's still on BBC Sounds, I don't know.
If you ever do need new representation, me and Carriad would love it.
Hello, is this Radio 4? Yeah. Now listen, we found someone. She's young, but my God. And she's not just saying dick, no, it's more. We're here to talk about the incredible short story collection, Send Nudes by Saba Sams.
So Olga, when we decided we were going to
cover this book,
we did a Christmas sort of roundup in a bookshop called Morocco Bound just down the road. And this book was on the shelf.
I had heard other people.
You'd heard
chat
other people
it.
Talk about yep. it. We decided we were going to do it, and then because you're cool and know about sex, that's why we paired
I've
you
had
up.
It.
That's why we paired you up with this book, not having read it. And then when I started reading it, I suddenly thought, oh gosh, because some of the topics are really, I get provocative.
Yeah, it's not stand up. We'll put it that way. It's quite hardcore emotional.
No, there's
writing.
No like gags.
No, there's not. It's not. Like
there's
a
no levity.
Minute. Yeah.
And so I hope it was. Okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, good. No, good.
It's fine. It was very, very, very good. I won't go. I mean, enjoyable to read, not enjoyable, I suppose, in content because that would be messed up.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing. It would sound really, I guess, poncy, pretentious to say, but in a way that good art should make you feel lots of feelings, and some of those feelings are really uncomfortable. it's that there is comfort in the fact that they're very common things.
Mm. I think sort of there is that like shock value surface that is, it's like quite sexy and quite explicit. But I thought the thing that did most effectively was describe relationships between women.
Mm. Yeah, it's much more about women than it is actually the sex they're having, isn't it?
And
yeah.
So like the story of like the sort of one-sided friendship.
Oh, yes.
That shook me to my core. I think that was like the most, I suppose, effective story of all of them. But then the sisters and even the last one with the mom, it's like there's these like relationships that you recognize. Because I feel like all relationships between women are so much more intense than
well, it's why we gossip other. Forever.
Yeah.
And we have to keep reanalyzing our female friends and their relationships because there are so many layers. Like it never gets boring, a female friendship, an ex-female friendship.
Oh my God, guys. Okay, I saw a TikTok. I'm so sorry to jump into it so fast. But I saw a TikTok that was like the modern horror story. And then it was like, when you receive this from your ex-best friend, and it's just, happy birthday, hope you're well.
This is why I can't go on TikTok. That sounds like a negative emotion to me. I can't skip past that. Ooh, that's affected you. Look, she's taking it in.
But you don't forget their birthdays.
No.
Of course you don't. Of course you don't. No.
I'm already
even like it gets to December and you go, oh, it's the 5th, it's coming up.
Yeah. I'm so bad at letting people go that I don't have anybody that would.
Carriad really works with people, even people that.
Because I had a grief early on, so I will not let you go because what if you die?
Mm. So even if they mistreat you or they don't want to be friends with you.
Oh, yeah, I'm still here, baby.
Carriad taught me to be a friend. I was such a bad friend. And rather than just being my ex friend, best friend, which is what I'd had cyclically, she was like, okay, you've done something really wrong.
I'm the one who stayed.
You're going to stay in this friendship and learn about yourself. And now I can be friends with people. Like I learned I learned intimacy
that's
from Carriad. Yeah. She's like the wife who's taken back the cheetah going, so that's good of me, wasn't it?
That's good of me. Thing is, but look at him. Look how well he's thriving.
I'm in the garden.
She's done so well.
I built a shed.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the best friend story? Well,
Can we also say there's 10 stories and they're brilliantly written, but I do think it's worth saying there is a thread of bleak sadness in a lot of these stories. And I found myself after each story having to put the book down like fucking hell, okay, this is a good example. Do you remember watching My So-Called Life?
Yes.
And I would watch My So-Called Life and it was so depressing. My brother would be like, why did you watch this program? It was so sad, you cry. And do you remember the end? Dance by the Light of the Moon was the production theme tune that would come on. And I'd sit there with like tears pouring down my face. And I would be like, why am I watching this? But I was a teenage girl, so it made sense. And it felt like this was dragging me back to that teenage feelings. And I felt slightly as someone in their early 40s. I was like, oh God, this is hard to go back. It's hard to go back.
That's what's incredible about it.
Yes.
It's whiplashes you back in the way that music can.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Or a smell.
Yeah.
And
I want to give a warning to our older readers.
Well, I think maybe a warning in general is that some of the things we're probably going to have to talk about now are, you know, those serious and upsetting things, but that also do happen to people.
Yeah. And also, but I feel like when you're in your teenagers and early 20s, like, everything's so intense. Like your friends are going through such intense experiences and you're going through such intense. That's what she captures. But equally, like it felt like reading a teenage diary. There was part of me that was like, no, thank you. No, thanks. I don't want to go back there today. Like, but it's brilliant writing.
Okay, so I think I do like going back there. You're a different age to us, Olga. You would never have drunk Blue WKD, I imagine.
I'm aware of it.
Yeah, probably
it's because I was in a different country. No,
a different country as well. But yeah, Blue WKD, Smirnoff Ices, when they were mentioned, I thought those little references were dappled in so carefully to keep telling you it's then.
Yeah.
It's that point in time.
She's much younger than us.
I had no idea.
But also, she was referencing Facebook quite heavily, which is not
of course,
social platform that is used.
She's 26.
Or maybe they just carried on doing Blue WKD. Yeah. We just thought it was discontinued because,
you found self-respect.
We sang going to bed at 9 o'clock.
Everything captured was so universal. Yeah, at no point was I like, this does not relate to me.
Exactly. I thought she was exactly my age. So Olga, how did you feel about the unhappiness in the stories?
Yeah.
Or spending time with the characters in their unhappiness?
Being whiplashed to teenage years.
I feel like there is this sort of morbid enjoyment of it. The sort of idea that you can dip your toe into this either teenage yearning or teenage sorrow, like the world is ending if he doesn't love me back or text me back. And I think that that's enjoyable in how overwhelming it is and how all-consuming it is.
self-destructive it can be. That period of self-destructiveness, which feels side by side with, you know, actually hurting yourself.
It's so different.
And you live through it and then you go, yeah, it's safe. That's a phase.
I feel like it's too near and you can slip back too easily. That's how I feel. Like it's like
you're a goth.
Honestly, I feel like even reading
the darkness is still near.
Yeah, reading
isn't
those
it?
Yeah. That dark places that women go to. I was like, I felt like it was drowned. I was like, I need to get back up. I got out of there. You're not going to pull me back. Like that's how I was like, fuck. Like, no, Saba, I can't go back. I read a lot of it on a train.
Yeah.
I had to put the book down. Obviously, I had to turn it over because I was next to an old man. I didn't want him to read Send Nudes on my cover. And he was doing his Sudoku and kept talking to me. So it would have been awkward. No. And I had to have like 10 minutes. Like, you're not there. You're not a teenager. Like you said, you survived that. But yeah, I found it very evocative. Her writing's really evocative.
I would say that I'm not a huge fan of the short story in general.
I am also not a huge fan of the short
story. Because it is possible for the whole thing to go by and you to go, what's happening? Where are they? Whereas what's so incredible is every story started and like before I got to the end of the first page,
fully immersed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew them. I knew who they were. I knew where they were.
Particularly that, I'd say Blue Forever. That one I thought was the best one. That's the one that won a short story prize, I think, particularly. The one
about the stepsisters.
Yeah, when they go on holiday and the stepsister, the younger stepsister and like a much older. I found that like, I mean, pain, toe curling to read, but like within half a page, I absolutely knew every character and what they were doing and how everyone was feeling. This new family merged from, 12-year-old and her mum and then like a 19-year-old and her dad and he'd had an affair and that's how they got together. And then her friend turns up who's all glamorous and I was like, oh God, just go back home. Everybody go back home. I can't deal with it. But I thought that story was fucking brilliant. That was my favourite, actually. It was Blue Forever.
Did you have a favourite, Olga?
I think it had to be Snakebite.
Oh, Snakebite. Yeah. I found it so upsetting.
It's upsetting.
I'm a serial, like, I want to say like best friend monogamist, but I keep coming back to people who are terrible to me.
Well, you're in my gang.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They're terrible to me, but then I tell myself, oh, they're not terrible. They're just the only ones telling me the truth. So I'll have a best friend for like 2 years who will be like, you're ugly, you look disgusting in this, you're going nowhere. And I'd be like, finally someone who's telling me the truth, the rest of you are lying.
Because she's talking to your inner saboteur, as RuPaul would say.
And then so I saw that and I was like, oh, that's a cyclical psycho friendship I would be in.
Familiar to you.
Yeah.
That Snakebite story, we should say, so is, a girl sort of lost in her world and then this girl kind of infiltrates her life and it's horrible to read because it is, I think even if you're the bad best friend, you've had a situation where like someone crazy comes into your life and you try and fix them.
Yeah.
You try and save them. You think
I'm,
you can
I'm
help.
I'm not saying this just because I'm the bad best friend. It's so tragic because the girl who is being the bad friend it's what your parents would say to you, I think, or it's a kind of parental thing to say if someone is being horrible to you at school. Mm. For instance, they would say, they're more unhappy than you are.
Yeah.
Yep.
Happy people don't behave that way.
Yeah, they've got like, stuff at home.
Yes.
It's not good.
And you think, and you think, how can it be true? And I think that's what's done so cleverly in that story is that there is, when they go to visit Lara's mum.
Oh God, that was so painful.
And you see how she's treated by her mother.
Yes.
And it becomes so clear that it's a very, very, very damaged, in pain person.
But you're watching two vulnerable women. That's what's so horrific. And do you know what I just realised? It's like, I have a daughter. And there's that thing of like, you've got through your teenagers, but you know you're heading towards teenagers with someone else. Mm. And so it's like looking at these teenage girls being like, oh God, you think you remember how bad it is, but it's actually worse.
Yeah.
And Lara, even though you could be like, well, yes, your mum is horrible and all this awful stuff is happening, she's still damaging that person. Well,
that's why I thought the ending was so incredible. Mm. In two of the stories, there were animals. There was a dog in the first story and there's a rabbit in that story. And I was really scared.
Yes, I was scared for the rabbit.
Because if you put an animal into really a scene, scared. You're like, oh no, someone's going to tread on the rabbit or someone's going to do something. And actually, nothing bad happens. Only to human beings do bad things happen in this book. The animals
are
fine.
No animals are harmed in the writing of this book.
For vegans reading, you'll be all right.
And I guess this is a spoiler for that story. So if anyone listening doesn't want to know what happens. But when she decides to sort of end that friendship, that is her being a kind, doing a kind thing.
What do you think? Is that how you saw it?
Absolutely, because she put the rabbit in the wardrobe.
Oh, I thought that was thoughtless.
No, that was her, keeping him. She gave him the watercress to say sorry.
Oh, had sex with the girl. She's defending the bad best friend.
I'm not defending her. I'm saying it was.
I thought it was thoughtless that she... I think this is really revealing as to what sides of the friendship we saw ourselves in.
Yeah,
I was like, she was so preoccupied with herself, she didn't even realize where the rabbit was.
Yeah.
Oh, so I thought it was like, she put him back in the box. She's put the friendship back in the...
No, I thought she literally closed the door and didn't even... Because it's not a good place to leave him. Like, he could have died in there.
No, I really read it as like, that girl is so thoughtless and unkind, wherever it comes from, that she got ready and she didn't even know the rabbit was in there and she left.
And that's like, that's the friendship. She put the friendship in the cupboard. She didn't even fucking care. And I was like, Meg, that's the
caring
lesson.
Is leaving and leaving the rabbit there, not taking the rabbit with her, I thought was the best.
Oh, good, come on, back.
She wouldn't, she wouldn't be able to take care of the rabbit.
No. So she left the rabbit with someone who was going to take care of
him. Yeah, because she didn't care about the rabbit.
Oh.
She didn't care. That's the friendship. And she didn't really care about the rabbit. She wasn't invested in that rabbit in the way that, like, Meg has made
but
this.
But she can't care because no one cared about her.
Yeah, that's true. But it doesn't stop the hurt that it, that's what I mean.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, no one taught her how to care, but that's not to say that she...
Impact over intent, as my therapist tells me.
But she brought back the watercress, the old watercress for the rabbit.
And it's soggy and it's out of date and it's like, you know, like it's not okay. And then,
but she knows what the rabbit wants or needs, which is the watercress. And then in terms of her friend, she knows the girl is in love with her.
Yeah.
And it's damaging and she knows she wants the best for her and she knows that she pushes her away and treats her terribly, so she has to go.
She definitely could have left before she did all the harmful things, is what I'm saying.
I mean, also, I feel like if you know that someone's in love with you and they're mad at you, the easiest thing is to fuck them.
Yeah.
The amount of times I've said I love you just to get out of an argument, come on.
But having sex with her was also that's okay, that's your soggy watercress.
You know, but I think that's cruel. I think it's cruel. I think, yeah, and it's, I agree with you, I think it's the best she can do, but it's still shit.
Okay. I think also it's clear that, like, in the environment that Lara was raised in, she feels like her body is the one sort of currency that she has, and it's a matter of like saying, well, you should give this guy a blowjob. That's course, currency.
Yeah. Yes.
And then having sex with her instead of apologizing or trying to make it better is currency.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that, like, she's bad because of that. It's like, that's what she knows.
Yeah.
I feel like to this day, this happens to me. When someone does something confidently enough, I mean, obviously, this is like a platitude. Mm. You don't really question it. You just assume that that's how things are done.
Yeah.
And then you try to, and if you're upset by it, you're like, no, I'm weird. I'm weird because
it's my fault. Yeah,
yeah, because they're clearly in control of what's happening, and so it feels like Meg just got sucked in.
Yeah,
so a person who was confident.
It's very hard to put a name on feelings sometimes. So you can be feeling deeply uncomfortable about something, but you're not really having the time to work out explicitly what are you uncomfortable with, what don't I like.
I thought it was really, I think this story was particularly good as well, because the way that Lara latches onto Meg, like, senses how vulnerable she is just at the
chooses her.
And then Meg goes home to, like, this loving home with these parents who seem to be supporting her, and she's like given up on her course. And you're like, again, that made me so sad, because I was like, what's happening that you're,
it's just low self-confidence.
Yeah, but
when she describes herself in certain clothes or borrowing certain things, she feels so ugly in that way that you can as a young person.
It's so
and
sad.
It's completely unconnected to how ugly or not you are.
Oh, yeah. And she's lost. She's definitely a lost soul. And that's what you can see drags them together. Of like, Meg is, Lara is completely fucking lost and doesn't care. That's her MO. And then Meg is like, well, I feel like this, but I didn't know how to express it. Look at this person expressing how lost they are. Oh, great. I'll go on this journey with her. But yeah, like, oh. I also identified heavily as the flatmate that was like, this is fucking disgusting. I was like, I am this person studying medicine that's like, your friend is gross. Like, stop bringing your friend. She ate my food and the kitchen's gross. I like the way she described the bedroom
with
the rabbit shit everywhere that just has become
so
part
visceral
of the room. I was like, no, that's not how.
But
not
did you notice that, like, there is so much writing like that now? That is like, Atessa Moshfegh writes that, like, if you and Eileen, that's like so visceral. I mean, also,
she,
like,
spends
even
a
Wetlands
lot of that
by
book.
Charlotte
Roche. I've only read Year of Rest and Relax.
But that's also quite a visceral
one.
The one where she
sits
on the floor of the
Atessa, Eileen, she spends a lot of time taking laxatives and she spends a lot of time describing the very, very long liquid shits she's doing to empty herself. And it's now a film, and I just don't know how they're going to do those scenes.
I'm playing shit one.
So Year of Rest and Relaxation. Yeah, it's amazing in terms of
that.
But Wetlands, by Charlotte Rush is one of my, like, I really would love to do that book on the podcast. She's like quite famous in Germany before she wrote it. She's a TV presenter. I think even a kids TV presenter. And basically the whole book is about her genitals. So she shaves her bum hole.
This is a classic.
She nicks herself. And then it gets infected and she has to go to hospital. And she has piles.
You told me about this.
And I was
this.
Just like, hemorrhoid detail. Yeah. Hemorrhoid detail.
Because social media, we share so much of our lives, but it's very filtered, even if you try to be a not filtered person, that books are reflecting that by being so visceral. Like, you wouldn't put this on fucking Instagram.
Like, censoring.
Yeah,
in
because
way.
Like, because we know so much about people's lives, but we don't know what it feels like when they have an hour long liquid shit. That's not making it to TikTok.
I don't think it's a social media thing. Mm. I think it's a literature thing. Like, it was shocking when James Joyce described a character having a wee. And then Beth Kitt described a character having a poo.
Henry Miller wiping his ass with a piece of bread. Yeah. Disgusting.
Well, there we go. So, and I think it's the opposite to shame. Mm. I actually think that's why reading is
all. So maybe we're reading more
all
women
by yourself.
Talking about it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think how I'd feel about. Yeah, would I care about a man shaving his butthole? Yeah, I'd still read it.
She wants the hemorrhoid details. That's what she's after.
We all have bodies, right?
Yeah,
and
true.
Bodies are disgusting.
We're not even drunk, but here's this. I love that sentence.
Okay, I have something that sort of unites both theories. Right. I think social media has pushed what intimacy is.
Oh,
and so we're finding new frontiers of intimacy.
Yeah,
and that's why it's shocking, because this is like the last paradigm.
Yeah.
The last frontier of intimacy that is yet not available to us, we're not desensitized to.
You can join the friend group. That was good what you did there. Because she got both our theories.
We need a third. A third to just constantly go, you're right and you're right. Yeah.
not a third in any other sense, Sarah. Just a third for reading.
So yes, it is shocking, like the pee.
Yes.
But it's only shocking because social media has moved.
But shocking in a wonderful way. I mean, this is why I find, to go back to menstruation.
Mm, sure, we always do.
I want to know about characters who menstruate. Menstruation.
Is there menstruation in here? I've forgotten.
Loads.
Which ones?
Yeah, there's a...
In today's square.
There's a description on a bed sheet of a patch of blood that's the size and colour of a two-pea.
Yes. Yes,
and when she brings the pants to her dad.
Mm. She shows him
that
right
one.
At the
Sorry,
beginning.
I'd forgotten Tenderloin. Yeah. Yes, yeah, that was great.
You were probably speed reading the period bits because you want to train next to an old man.
There'd been quite a tense incident about seat reservations. It was all very tense, guys. So
if you'd started reading aloud, you'd have been sitting alone, my friend.
Actually, yeah, I would have got my seat then. Yes, the bit in Tenderloin. That's the first story. And that one upset me so greatly that I just thought, oh, that girl. I just really felt so sad for her.
Oh, it's such a happy ending.
It was a happy ending.
And we end up with a dog.
Are we both right? Oh, gosh.
Okay, have you seen Poor Things?
No, not yet. Babies, but she basically is a woman who wakes up with a baby's brain. Is that
yes?
It's based on a book, isn't it?
It is universally acclaimed. I hated every minute of it.
You're not the first woman that said that to me.
I've talked to some other women. They were like, yes. So the idea is,
but everyone's hailing it as feminist.
Yes,
that's the big thing. Yeah.
My issue with it is, and I'm sure I'm not the only one who has this issue, but like, she's just like has this lust for life, and she's loving everything. But the men in the movie are just as terrible as any other men, and they take advantage of her. And you're meant to kind of like laugh and be disgusted by the men because they're like, oh my God, you want to fuck a baby? What's wrong with you? But then because it's a feminist sort of take, because she's never affected by any of it. And so the message almost becomes, if you choose not to be disturbed by the disturbing men, that's how you win.
This is why when they actually do eventually just end up with sex dolls, it's like, great.
You go over there, you sort yourself out.
Because the problem was we didn't like it.
Yeah.
As long as we change, take us out of the equation.
Yeah, so at some point she's like, men are being really, really gross to her, but she's like just laughing at them instead of being horrified. And it's like, that's how you win. That's how you win, ladies. Yeah. Yeah. You just laugh at them when they're gross. Don't be sad. That's on you. And so how I felt about the first story was very similar in that like, she seemed to be okay with all this awfulness going on around her. And so I guess it's like, oh, it's not traumatic because she's not traumatized. But it's like, no, but the men around her are still.
And
not
I think that's
great.
How I felt reading it as an older woman. As an old woman.
Yeah.
I was reading this kid be like, and again, that reaction that you have about things of like, oh yeah, that's fine. And being older, being like, it's not.
Oh, I never thought the writer was telling it was fine.
No,
the
age gap, the character 16, telling you it's
the 16
fine.
16 to 27, straight away, you have a writer telling you about a child entering the adult world without an adult to protect
her. Her dad being so like, she tells him, and Dad's like, oh, you don't tell me stuff like that. And
I was that's
like,
why it's a happy ending, because that dog bit all the bad men.
Okay.
I felt that was such a huge of, like, love is love.
Oh, my God.
Love is love.
All right. She's got a good
point.
You're
really
on that
swaying
one.
Me
and they were
on
kind
one.
To each other. Maybe this is because I love my dog so much, but the thing of, like, sleeping in a bed with a dog, they don't smell nice, but they smell of them. And it's when you love them, it's such a beautiful smell, a horrible meaty breath. That if it was a man.
That as a vegan.
A person. And exactly.
You don't
as
even
a
mind.
Vegan. That's how big the love is.
Yeah.
And then, like, there's the big eyes when you just open your eyes and look, and that's the first part of the day. Oh, God, have you ever had that with a dog?
or a man with his big meaty breath?
You can't have it with a man.
No, I see.
Human interactions are too complex, but there's a purity with an animal. And that's what she finally got was, what would you call it?
I think I just found her so.
A sort of like binary good badness.
Unconditional yeah. love, the purest kind, the kind that most people never get. And that's 16 years old, she found it.
That's, you've sold me. Yeah. You've sold me. And I like that the dog bit the bad man.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The one I did like, actually, which I thought was more optimistic, was that Here Alone, when she goes to the bar and picks out that guy and then goes to the...
Oh, to the engagement party.
The engagement party.
No. So I found that really hard.
Oh, I... There was something that I felt, again, like she had more control in that situation.
Again, a very, very positive ending.
Yeah, like, the ending was
great.
I
thought Send Nudes was a very positive ending.
Yes. Yeah.
So this is why, if anyone's listening goes, oh, this sounds bleak, some of the topics are so...
Yeah, bleak sort of effect, there's a backbone to it of deep female sadness, which I think she's investigating. And I don't think it's not like, oh, you're good. I didn't feel... depressed. I wasn't like, oh,
she's,
God.
And she's not saying that sadness is inevitable and you won't
get over it.
I think she's saying
it's just she's taking you. She's taking you there, and she is showing you this is how sad sometimes women feel. And if you are someone who's been deeply sad, I think it can be confronting to be like, fuck, those feelings are so hard. It's
but
very
I think
sad.
That's the problem, actually, is that you can be a really, really lucky, privileged person. Not that much is wrong. You're incredibly miserable, making bad decisions, feeling very heartbroken. And a lot of her characters, that's what I would describe them as. As you said, you know, there's a character who's from Lara's from a loving family. Her dad would lend her 2 months' rent without noticing.
Meg.
She's doing well on her course. She just feels like she looks a bit ugly in a crop top. And yet,
but that's what it's almost exposing, isn't it? Because it is like, some people, or maybe this is unfair to say, some women, like the depths of sadness that you can feel sometimes in that world. Yeah. When the world just feels like it's too hard to be in.
What about then if we say that sex is such a problem for a lot of these characters?
Yeah.
Because I was just remembering that Meg had only had sex once and it was under a hedge at a party.
Yeah.
And, you know, very unenjoyable, not about her pleasure.
And that's where the self-esteem thing comes from, isn't it? Like people don't approach her and, she's living with people who don't really care about her. She hasn't found her gang.
And that's the vicious cycle of low self-esteem. You make bad sexual decisions.
But then Lara has all the sex in the world and she still doesn't have high self-esteem.
I was saying, low self-esteem makes you make bad sexual decisions, which makes you feel bad about yourself.
Mm.
Sorry to sound
like our PHSE teacher.
Like just.
So we shouldn't have sex, Miss Pascoe.
Abstinence is the only answer.
Okay, well, you just put this ring on and we're going to cheer up.
Now Jesus is really happy.
I would recommend it. I think it's just that, like, the overwhelming feeling I often got was like this sadness.
And female children... or people at the edge of childhood encountering adult men.
Yeah.
And I guess that's so uncomfortable, isn't it?
It's not great.
So the girls who were, their mums were the trapeze artists.
I found that
artists.
One really, really hard. The festival one, that it's called The Mothers and the Girls.
Oh, yeah.
I found that one really difficult. Like, I just wanted to grab those children and run away. Like, I just, yeah. I was like, why are they, when the mums were like, see you later, I was like, they're fucking, they're like 12, they need to be in bed. Like, what's happening? Like, I just.
Just generally, there's like, there's so many of the stories that we just talked about. If anything, maybe all of them have this idea of like, the girls have a bigger like world of the relationships in their heads that there is in reality.
Yeah.
And I think the most visceral one for that one is the engagement party where she had a full relationship with this man who did not give a shit about
her. There's a really incredible moment where she realizes in inverted commas that she's in love with him.
Oh God. And she starts laughing.
And it's so funny because I've definitely had that happen to me several times in my life where you've had a very, very small interaction with someone. I mean, which could be full sex, but you know, you don't know, there's not this huge bank of intimacy and your body decides for you. Yeah, I'm waiting for a text. Boop, that's it, I'm in love.
I know.
It just does it for you, the chemicals do it.
But she's walking on the street just laughing, isn't she? And then she like almost gets run over because she's laughing so much.
Because her body is literally filling with that, you know, what's it called? Phenylephrine? PEA is the hormone. Okay. It's the one that makes you sort of a little bit of addicted to them.
This is like factual, that people will fall for romance scams, find out that the person is a scammer, yet still message them because it's like, I don't really care. Because it's like, I'm still getting that hit. And I think it's easy to look down on them. And then you're like, wait a second. If they're getting what they need to get out of this, then sure, fine. Have your fun.
Yeah, I think that's how I felt about that story. Because initially, again, I was worried for her. I was upset. I didn't think she was going to be okay. And at the end, I was like, oh, she's okay. Like, she's eating her carbonara and there'll be another guy. Like, that's what I liked. She, to me, was such a resilient character, whereas often I felt like she was presenting you with such vulnerable characters that immediately I'm stressed. I'm stressed for how vulnerable. Like those girls in the festival who were like 12 and the 16-year-old boy. I was like, oh, I'm already
worried
about
them. The worst thing is to choose between how horny you are for the boy and how much you love your best friend. That's terrible.
When he kissed one of them, doesn't he? And then he kissed the other one. They're like, what? I thought you liked me. And he was like, oh, I thought that's what was happening. I thought we were like all going to kiss. And they're like, no, choose. I was like, oh God, that was, that female logic. Of like, yeah, we've been holding hands with you, but ultimately we want you to say which one is prettier.
Like,
that's what we need to know so we understand where we are in this world.
And the almost like gambling level of risk of like, I know there's a 50-50 chance that I will get hurt and want to fucking die.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to risk it all.
I think you're right. It's about women and it's about female friendships and female connections much more than it is about the men in the stories, particularly in Blue Forever, the stepsister relationship with the friend. Like, it's, you know, much more than it is about the dad. And
the moment I loved in Blue Forever. So we've got this older stepsister, Jasmine, and her friend Blue that sort of come to visit them on holiday. And she puts on the younger girl, Stella's clothes.
Oh, that was hilarious.
And so it describes the T-shirt first, which is a bumblebee. And it says B, spelt like a bumblebee, kind. And then when the stepsister is saying she can't come with us, she points to her T-shirt and goes, read the shirt. Read it and weep. And it's like those kind of moments that absolutely go, I know that person. I know how wonderful she is and how much this 12-year-old would look up to her.
Oh God, yeah. And she's wearing a 12-year-old's T-shirt and shorts.
And making a point to her friend of like, we're nice.
Yeah.
Be nice.
I thought that one was particularly, like, as I said, just like, the characters felt so real. Like, you really felt like you were on this awful holiday with them.
Okay, well then can I ask you then?
Yes.
Did you think that the stepdad was a paedophile?
Oh yeah, it was unclear, wasn't it?
Or if not a paedophile.
Something.
So he's taking photographs of the 12-year-old all the time. And
his daughter is very angry in this complicated relationship and destroys the camera.
Destroys the camera towards the end. Really insinuating that it's not healthy. His photography of young women's bodies.
Yeah. I certainly had a moment where I was like, oh, he's a bad person.
There's enough touching, like hands on shoulders, buying her presents, that is definitely heavily insinuated.
But I really liked writing-wise, my non-judgment, you know.
Yeah.
I was about to say my non-paedophile judging hat, which no one should ever wear.
Oh.
But what I liked writing-wise...
I hope that was on sale when you bought it.
I'll take two.
Azora doing a non-paedophile viewing hat.
My friend Sarah. Obviously, it's terrible, but what I liked about the writing is she stays within the 12-year-old's point of view. Mm. So she doesn't... she doesn't do that thing that I think it would be easy to do, which would be to like, so he's a bad man. We know he's a bad man. She stays fuzzy in that, like, you sort of think maybe he's dodgy, but you don't get to pin it down.
Yeah.
And in an adult point of view, and you don't get to have that moment of like, yes, he's wrong. And we're going to have the scene where everyone tells him. We just live in this world where it's like, the 12-year-old thinks he's super cool, the coolest like stepdad ever. But we see these older girls' reactions who scream at him. That for me was such skillful writing. It was like, show, don't tell. It was just like hinting and allowing you to make the decision for it, which is why I thought that story particularly was so good.
Were you uncomfortable?
I was uncomfortable for some of it.
Yeah.
But I think because of this general trend in mostly female-written fiction of this sort of sensory immersion, I'm kind of almost used to that.
You're getting you're getting an urge to
it. But I do really enjoy it again. And it's like, it's not trying to make you feel nice and fuzzy.
Yeah.
That's not the intention of the author.
Yeah.
I very much felt like I was with an author who was very in control of the buttons she was pressing.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think the subtlety is almost like more horrifying than whenever it's like just completely flatly out on the page.
Yeah.
Also just Blue as a character, there's something so mesmerizing about like not an arrogant, but a really truly confident teenager.
Yeah.
To this day, if I meet a confident teacher, I'm like, how do you do it? Where are you
going? I honestly think teenage girls, if you could harness that unquestioning energy, that's who will save the world.
Mm. How do we do it?
Greta Thunberg is trying.
She's trying her
best. She's trying her very best. She's
in her pedophile judging hat. I think you need to create merch. I once asked my brilliant mother when I was a kid, I was like, Mom, which age do you wish you were? And she looked at me and she said, I'm only ever want to be the age that I am now.
Oh, wow.
And when I was a teenager and she said that, I'd be like, in my head, I was like, she's lying. She wishes she was 19. She wishes she was in her early 20s without kids. And now the older I get, the more I realize how true what she said was.
Yeah.
Because you could not pay me to be 25.
No, thank you.
I think that's such a, that is how we should all be living our lives in terms of, and if it's not the age you are now, then fucking change your life. Because you are the age you are now.
Yeah. Sarah will be available for motivational speeches.
change
your fucking life.
So thanks, Carrie will defend you in court.
Yeah, you don't let go.
I don't let go, guys. Never mind what you've done. I'm still here. Yeah, I think that's a very interesting point. And I am so glad not to be back there. But then again, I hate to sound like a man being like, well, as a father of daughters, but I feel like as someone who's going to go through teenage life with a girl, it's like,
I think they just stay in their rooms on computers now.
Yeah, and that's fine, isn't it, Sarah? Totally safe.
Terrible things happen.
Yeah, no, on
Sims.
The internet.
Get her on Sims.
Yeah, is there a way for her like to have all the tech but not have any internet connection?
Yeah, sadly.
Yeah, there is. You don't do it to the proper internet. You do it like an intranet just that's in your house.
Yeah, make your own version of Google.
www.carryadshouse.com. Tell her that's the internet.
Do you know that's what my dad did?
Whatever she's messing, you catfish her. you create all the faces of like boys and girls her age. You're an improviser. You just
that is so fucked up.
Have the cast of ostentation.
The cast of ostentation.
Should be like everyone speaks in really good Regency English at my school.
So fucked up that I'm so worried about the real world. I will create a fake world for my own characters.
Yeah, Truman Show Your Own Baby.
She's going to write a great book about me as a mother.
You go to the
that's
going to
be an incredible book.
Go to the playground, take pictures of all the kids.
Okay, already creepy. So
I know,
creepy.
It's okay. You've got your hat on. Everyone knows you're not a pedo. And then you do fake profiles and then you just send her compliments all the time. Thought you were so great in maths today, that you're so strong and clever. And you say all these kind of things, really good affirmations.
I think I've read a story about someone doing that on Instagram. Like they made a fake profile so that they could be friends with their daughter and would write, "You look great on things." And but then like she obviously wasn't writing in the right tone. So be like, "What's wrong with you?"
There's a film, I think it's called Dog's Tooth, about these parents who want to protect their children and keep them in the house. And the bit I remember is that they don't know what aeroplanes are. They always ask them because they are so well. So they have to make these little toy aeroplanes and they throw them because they sometimes. So they think that the aeroplanes from the sky fall into the garden.
Oh my God.
They find the toy, they go, another one fell out of the sky.
Wow.
Yeah.
sounds like a lot of work, but she would write such a good book about it when she's 21 and escaped from me and my cult. You know, and then I could say to her, well, look what you got out of it.
Well, she'll have really good self-belief. She'll be like, people were saying, like, you can be anything you want to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how esteem works. Your mother creates a fake world where you can never fail. And then you go into the real world and it's exactly the same.
Mm. When I was at primary school, yes. I was told I could be anything I wanted to be. Mm. And Mrs. Banks was explicit. She said, if you want to be an astronaut, I believe you could be an astronaut. Yeah. And I believed her. And now I'm a comedian. Despite for very many years not being funny. Because I was like, Mrs. Banks said I could do what I want. And I want to do this.
I would argue that's less to do with Mrs. Banks and more to do with your reaction to Mrs. Banks, I would argue. Because she probably told a whole class of people that and not all of them became successful comedians.
Did any of them become successful astronauts?
Well, one boy played for Arsenal, which I was actually better. Actually, out of 30 kids, that's pretty good, isn't
it?
That's
pretty good. Yeah. That's pretty good. Oh, would you recommend Send Nudes?
I'd absolutely recommend Send Nudes. I'd also recommend it, and not to be infantilizing, but to men.
Yes,
read.
That's a good point.
Oh, do you talk to men?
You've seen her stand up. She talks to them.
Yeah. As a little slice of insight.
Yeah, I think that's very good.
Because sometimes the reason I keep coming back to Snakebite is sometimes I find it very difficult to explain how intense female friendships can be.
Yeah.
And as a self-proclaimed bisexual woman, I feel like I had a lot of really sort of homoerotic female friendships. Yes. That explode. And that's something that happens to so many bisexual women. That's like a universal experience for bisexual women. And so that really, really spoke to me because I definitely have been in those dynamics where you're like, I'm obsessed with you. Mm. I don't know where this obsession comes from. I hate you, but I hate seeing you with anyone else. I don't know if this is love. I don't know if this, but it's such a explosive feeling that this is the closest I've ever felt it when reading.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot, and again, I'm generalizing here, but a lot of men are on the opposite end where you see these men talking about the loneliness epidemic and saying they don't have any friends. And so if they want to experience, if they want
to. Well, the other side is like
a friendship promotion
experience.
Think
you can deal with this, Jeffrey?
You'll be pining for yourself with a pine.
I'm self-proclaimed straight. And it's very, very similar. Like the friendship.
I'm an ally, don't want.
Thank you. But the friendship.
She's so brave.
It's actually exactly the same in terms of that you share a bed with someone. You finish. You know, like one of you smokes one half of the cigarette, the other one finishes it.
But yeah, I think that's you.
Oh,
I think you have intense relationships with people.
Well, I did at that age when I had lots of space.
Still have those.
You know,
really, really
you're drunk. Yeah. You wear each other's clothes. You kiss the boy the other person likes. It's just this constant thing, and it's actually the most intimacy that it is like a dwarf star. It can only explode. Yeah. There is nowhere for it to fit in your adult life because anything less than everything is rejection.
Yes, it's betrayal.
Yeah.
And, so and even the two girls who want to kiss the same boy, it's so much between them. It's, it has nothing to do with the boy.
Oh, yeah. He's
it's nothing
prop.
To do with him. Yeah. It's nothing to do with him. That's so frustrating because when you're a teenager, it becomes about him and it takes years before you're like, God, actually, you could have been one of many men interchangeable. It was about us and our status with each other, and this went back to like year 9 when Mrs. So-and-so said I was better at this, like that's what it's about. Oh God. Yeah, she's brilliant. And I, you know what I feel? I'm excited to read a full short story from Saba Zams. That's what I'd like.
A longer book for
a
once.
A longer book. Okay. I'd like, your homework, Miss Sams, is to write a full novel. What a patronising old woman I am. But that's what
but
I really
would love
to
how amazing to be able to create, because each of these stories is a novel.
Yeah.
How amazing to be able to create it so quickly.
Yes. I recommended this to a very, very intelligent older man who's read everything.
Giles Brandreth.
it wasn't Giles Brandreth, but it's in that category, like so well read that, you know, it's in
Stephen Fry
almost. And he was reading a series of short stories, and I said, oh, I'm reading a series of short stories. And I said this, and this was heartening to me that he was like, that looks brilliant, I'm going to read this. A man in his late 60s, I think. And he said, it's just so good, it's so interesting to know what youthful people are thinking and talking about. It's not just for like young women to read. I recommend it. I did recommend it. Yeah. I've already done it. Have you? Have you been busy? Have you recommended it to someone? To your children?
Theodore? Do you want to read a book that doesn't have a dragon in it? Steen, do you want to know why I shouted at you yesterday and said your jumper was too big for the washing basket? It's because I didn't know what to do with the emotions.
No, sit down. Now listen, snake bite is a drink. It's a drink. Okay.
I can't imagine my husband ever understanding what it's like to be a teenage girl. Mm. Maybe that is what happens to dads when their daughters become teenagers. Yeah. They are like, what?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you're seeing the other side of it, aren't you?
Yeah.
Like, you can't ignore it. It's at your home.
Yeah. And then if you are straight, your wife's just nodding at you like, uh-huh.
What is a good dad to a teenage girl? Yeah. Because, like, we saw the representation of the dad who's, like, non-judgmental.
Yeah.
But he's so far removed from everything she's doing. I think this is where the astronaut thing comes in.
I think, wouldn't it be perfect if your dad just went to space... And then you turn 21, 22, re-meet again as friends. I don't know how.
I read a really good thing that was like, one of the massive problems with parenting is that whoever becomes the main primary carer as a child often continues. And actually, if you split it properly and a mother genuinely took the first 10 years, because that often is when you genuinely do need the mother to be around. And at like 10, 11, 12, the father then took 10 years off his work to take over, because actually there's lots of psychological theories that's actually, as a teenager, you would need more advice from a father, that would be more helpful. And the mum by that point is tired and burnt out. She's done all the raising, rather than like, no one is in charge. Yeah. And that was thinking like, actually, yeah, if your dad turns up at 10, it's like, right, my shift. I'm going to do everything that she's been doing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So like, I'm talking like stereotype idea of what mum does of like, but the dad like gives up his job. In a way that the mum had to do when the baby was born.
I think we're taking a lot of things for granted.
Oh, yeah. No, we are. But it was an interesting theory of like...
I understand the theory that the male input could be so valuable then.
Yeah, and also that you could genuinely share...
But they'd have to be so competent.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, exactly, because they haven't been there for the first 10 years doing anything.
Well, my dad sort of only started being interested in me and with any of his children once they could like absorb information.
Yeah.
And then he kind of stops being interested once they can question that information.
Oh, really?
But the sweet spot, 10 to 15, it's just regurgitating of history, isn't it? Like Roman Empire, the Greeks, and you're like...
Can I ask about your dad?
Please.
Were his parents around his whole life?
Yes, but his dad is just like a completely removed
and man. Because Philippa Perry says if one of your parents wasn't present, so for a dad it would be a dad for part of your life, you can't deal with your children effectively sometimes because you didn't have an example of how to do it.
Which is common.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
And common in grief. So if you lose a parent at a certain age, you never
at
had
that age,
a parent.
When you've got children, you suddenly go...
Because when you were there, this is what we talked about before, because my dad died when I was 15. So I was after 16 to 80, I wasn't like a normal teenager. So like, I don't know how to deal with teenagers past that age because it's like, well, I didn't have that.
Lucky there's Auntie Sarah to take them to the pub, isn't it?
Auntie Sarah gave you what? A snake bite. Right, hang on, Ben.
Off a paper plate.
It was a short story. It was a short story.
I know I let her get away with everything, but actually this time... Anyway, we've gone off topic.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank
Olga.
You so much for having
Thank you
me.
So much.
What can we recommend? People going to come see your gigs?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, please. I'm on tour. All information is on my website, www.rockandrollga.com.
And that's the real internet, not the house internet that your mum set up. Thank you for listening to the Weirdos Book Club.
You can find out about all the upcoming books we're going to be discussing on our Instagram at Sarah and Carriad's Weirdos Book Club, or one word.
My novel Weirdo and Carriad's book You Are Not Alone are both available now. Thank you for reading with us.
We like reading with you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams.
And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy our podcast. It's called Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.
We have a podcast and it might be, I probably don't want to sound, like I'm bragging, but it's dynamite. It is electric. It's high voltage. And please, we really need you to listen. You don't understand how much we need this.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. But this one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.